If parenthood came with a GPS, it would most likely just say recalculating. Join Yolandi Becker and her guest experts Wednesdays at 11 a.m. for Bump and Beyond, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Yes, this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And first of all, I have to say, Happy New Year. It's a new year, a new show, and I'm very excited. Next week even, our live show is moving to a different slot. So I'm excited for all the changes that is coming, and you must have heard all the wonderful, exciting things that are happening at Chai FM. On the note, though, of New Year's, I have to say, I actually started work a week earlier this year. Normally, we only come back from holiday middle of January. And this year, like very good people, I don't know, workers, I don't know what you want to call me. I decided, you know what, I don't want the rush of the middle of the January trying to catch up. I'm going to start earlier. And I thought, you know what, this week I can ease nicely into things because now it's a week earlier. I have a week extra. Lo and behold, it started just like any other first week of work. I feel like a headless chicken, to be honest. I'm still trying to find a flow. At the moment, mostly, I am just being sucked in by this current and hoping I'm going to survive. But it's a nice current. It's not horrible things that are happening around me. It's a blessing when you have work, when you have things to do. So it's not a bad thing necessarily. But yes, I started this year with a proper bang. Let me know a little bit how your year has started. Are you a believer in New Year's resolutions? Do you do stuff like that? I normally don't. I have to say I'm not big on New Year's resolutions. My best friend, though, she makes me think, first of all, reflect on the year and think about it. And then she also always has these kind of mottos for the year. And then it makes me also want to do it and then think about it and whatever. So I have of late had some New Year's resolution, not big things often. It's more things like how I want to go with what I want to do for the year and what I want to kind of have. And one of my big things is actually having a few boundaries in place. It's in my nature, especially of my job, to help people because they're not sleeping. And anyway, and sometimes I just say yes and yes and yes and yes and yes and yes. And then I feel like what I'm feeling like today is slightly overwhelmed. So I have to learn, even though I'm pretty good at saying no, I feel even more so. More no's need to happen. Anyway. I want you to share a little bit of you today. Do you have some really good New Year's resolutions? Do you believe in New Year's resolutions? Do you not have those things? I'm a very goal-oriented person, so I do feel I have goals. But New Year's resolutions, not really my thing. But like I said, I have, I guess, been sucked into the current with that one as well. But today, specifically the show, we are talking about something I think that is very important and sits at the heart of parenting at every age. It's something that we always worry about. And I think it's something that we're a lot more aware of. Not, I think, all ages and all eras, obviously it was something, but I do think our children's emotional needs is something that I know that parents are very, very concerned about and thinking about constantly. Are my kids doing well? This, you know, with the rise of depression, anxiety, the pressure of life. I mean, I'm on the 7th of January and I'm already drowning. And imagine our children with all the things that need to happen. So I think our children's emotional needs is really something that we need to take at heart and that we have to think about a little bit. It's not a nice to have thing, emotional needs. It's a core need that shapes how our children sees themselves, how they see others, how they see the world. So I do think it is an important kind of thing to keep in mind. And helping me talk about what is referred to as the five core emotional needs of children. It sounds very, very specific. I'm pretty sure it's a very vast array of things. My guest expert today is a specialist in early childhood development, Lizette van Heinsteen. She's been on the show before. Hello, Lizette. How are you today?
I'm very well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So, like I said, it is a very important topic to talk about. And I do think we all, you know, want our children to be emotionally well. And from my own perspective, just like I feel I want to start off with, because I feel like often what we want for our children, if we say things like that, it's like we want them to be happy and we want them to be content with their lives and things like that, which is great. But from my own perspective, I want, just as a reminder, to remind people before we start with this conversation that good emotional well-being does not entail being happy and content all the time. In all honesty, that's a psychopath who's happy and content all the time. You cannot be happy and content. And it's not a normal thing to be happy and content all the time. You should be happy most of the time, hopefully. But you can't be. You should be sad if someone passes away. You should be angry if someone punches you in the face. Good emotional well-being is not about happiness. It's about having the appropriate response considering the situation. And on that note, though, Lizette, when we're looking at these five core emotional needs that our children have, I mean, I believe like with anything within the body, you know, I have a foot problem now, but it's actually a calf problem. you know, I have a, which also influences my butt. nothing is ever isolated, you know, and I think it's the same with this emotion, these core emotional needs, these five core emotional needs. They are deeply interrelated probably, and rather than separate things. But before we look into each one of these, let's start with what are these five core emotional needs?
Okay, so I think it'll help to give just a little bit of background on where this came from so that we know why we can trust the research and the information. So this has all originated in schema therapy, which is a kind of psychological treatment that is very popular and very effective. And the basic premise is that a psychologically healthy individual is someone, adult, child, older person, whichever age or gender or culture, someone who have these five core emotional needs sufficiently met. So we can also learn a lot about ourselves and our own emotional needs as we learn to parent our children according to these five aspects that now outline what we need to give attention to. So as the head of the Practical Advisory Service, this is very handy for me because we always promise parents that we will give them a comprehensive picture, a big picture of what they need to do and give attention to, pay attention to. So it helps a great deal to know, okay, these are the five core emotional needs. If I pay attention to these things and I make sure that these needs are sufficiently met, it'll never be perfectly met because there is no such thing as a perfect parent. But if we understand what these needs are and we can meet them sufficiently, then we can make sure that we give our children a better chance to be productive adults and less likely to develop mental disorders as they grow older. So it's a barrier, a buffer against dysfunction, basically, and also in adults. And the basic premise of schema therapy is that we as adults now have the responsibility to meet these needs in ourselves, and to make sure that we do whatever we can to make sure that we develop these things. I'm going to list them. So the first thing is that we will have secure attachments to other people. Secondly, we need freedom to express our valid needs and emotions. Thirdly, we, even as adults, have a need for spontaneity and play. Four, we have a need for autonomy and competence. And five, We need realistic boundaries and limit setting in our lives. So do our children.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
Yes, if you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 Chai FM, and this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And as always, we're talking parenting. Today, we're talking with Lizette van Huysien. She's an expert and a specialist in early childhood development. And we're talking about the five core emotional needs of our children and how to take care of these. Before I get more into that, I do want to remind you, I really would love to hear from you. If you've got a question about these emotional needs, of course, please do ask. But more importantly, I want to know, do you have some emotional, maybe, New Year's resolutions? I think a boundary is also part of my emotional needs that I am satisfying. That's why I have it in place. But do you have some New Year's, do you even believe in New Year's resolutions? I would love to hear from you. So please do send us a WhatsApp on 061-895-1019. We would love to hear from you. So please do send us a WhatsApp and we would love to interact with you. Yes, on that note though, like I said, my guest is Lizette, and we are talking about the five emotional needs, core needs. Very, very, like, sounds very important. Yeah, which it is. She explained that to us. The first one, though, is what is referred to as a secure attachment. And I just want to, first of all, share, because I am a sleep consultant by day, well, it is day, but I am also a sleep consultant, as most of you know. But, and this is often something that parents, like, I also sometimes feel misunderstand, and I would like to go into this a little bit more, but lots of parents always, they don't want to do anything about the attachment. And it's such a like big word at the moment. And I think, we hear this term often, but it also can feel, sometimes I feel vague, a secure attachment, because I feel sometimes people feel this is, you physically have to be with your child all the time. That seems to be a common perception. But also it can feel very overwhelming for parents when they hear this, because they're feeling, obviously we all want to bond with our child. I have not met a parent that doesn't want to have that. But Lizette, what does secure attachment look like in real life? I mean, life is not perfect. We cannot. It's impossible to be with your child all the time. I also don't know if it's really healthy to be with your child all the time. How in a messy and imperfect world, what does this secure attachment look like?
Well, basically, the way that I explain it to parents to help to make it simple is that there are two categories of things that we need to pay attention to. The first thing is what we do, the way we respond to our children. And the second thing is our character, who we are. Both these things are equally important, like the two wings of an airplane. To keep this thing afloat in the air, we need both.
Yes.
So in terms of what we do, it's the idea that we create an environment for our children who is overall not something that stresses them out, that we are predictable. They can predict that we have their best interest at heart. They can predict that we will keep them safe, that we will provide an environment for them that is stable and nurturing, and that we won't different from day to day, that we won't be laughing at something today, thinking the same thing is terribly, wrong the next day, and just totally ignoring it the day after that. So it's a sense of predictability, and we're caring, we're having their back, we are invested in them, we bought into the idea of being parents, and we want them to do well, and we're on their side. So that's how we act. And then the other thing is the environment that we provide for them. You know, having an environment based on routine is very important to develop a sense of attachment with children, because they need to know that I'm going to be fed three times a day, or how many times, you know, they need to be fed at their age. I need to go to bed at a certain time. There is some predictability and order and routine in my life, and that is equally important. So, I think if we just keep both those two things in mind, it makes it much easier in our minds.
Yeah, to have that secure attachment, because that's what it is. I feel the word attachment sometimes is misperceived of having to be there all the time with your child. And I've met so many moms, especially when they're seriously sleep deprived, that is physically with their child. And they're sitting, you can't see me now because you're on radio, but looking at their phones. So they're physically with their child, but they're not mentally present. And that's what is a very big difference for me also to understand about creating that attachment. And I think Lizette mentioned it so nicely also about how you respond to your child. There should be a response, and you should actually be looking at them. And you can't, I'm always feeling like if my children are looking at their phones and things like that, I'm like, it's such a reflection of something that I'm doing. Think of that now before they're 12 and 14. The second need, which you mentioned, which is one of my favorite things, is feeling safe. And I mean, this is something really that I honestly like, I feel I strive towards in my parenting, is creating a safe environment to express valid needs and emotions, especially for my son, to be honest. Obviously for my daughter as well, but I do feel that emotions are very much, it's allowed for girls and for women to have emotions. But often for boys and young men, it is not so much. So for me, I've always been very, like, I want to create an environment where both my children, not just my daughter, both my children have an environment where they feel that they can actually express their needs and their emotions. But it can be challenging, even for me, because I don't sometimes love, I mean, now I'm saying my son, but he's also like, he's a pretty, you know, he's got man flu when he's sick. You know, I always say he already, I mean, he doesn't necessarily cry anymore, but he already complains before he falls. but how do we deal with those big emotions, inconvenient sometimes emotion, especially if you're talking your toddler is having a tantrum and sometimes it's uncomfortable as well. What are some of the common pitfalls that we fall into as parents when it comes to creating these, an area of valid needs and emotions and expressing them?
I think most important thing is that we need to be the adult in the conversation.
That's putting it bluntly. Not like that.
I think it's difficult nowadays because parents kind of get the message that they need to have this special relationship with their child where they're best friends and they share everything and they're like so open with each other. But we cannot make our children responsible for our feelings. We have to be the adult. We can't tell them how sad they're making us when they do this and you're breaking my heart and turn them into the nurturer of us. That is not healthy. Yeah. Although it feels like a way to teach them empathy, that scares them and it drives them into a state of feeling guilty and not accepted.
Oh.
So the important thing for us is just to be the adult and to look at them and to be able to filter our responses and our shock and our feelings while they speak to us with the intent of giving them the opportunity to practice their very immature communication skills. We have to accept that these children aren't able to self-regulate yet, but we are. We're the adult. They're the child. They don't have words for their feelings yet. And it's not our job to tell them what they feel, because they need to practice exploring their own feelings. It's our job to just look accepting, act as if we're not shocked, not show that we hurt when they say something like my granddaughter said the other day, Oma, I wish you weren't my Oma because you're so bossy. I hear you.
Would you cry into your pillow later?
Oh my word. But you know, thing is the little one is 4 years old, and I am so proud of her that she's able to have this open relationship. At least from her side, it needs to be open, that she's able to practice with me and I can stay calm and sit with her in the emotion, not try to fix the emotion as probably as quickly as I can, or you know, distract her attention to something else and say, okay, so let's go see what the dog is doing. That won't help her. You know, just be with her in it, feel comfortable with it, knowing that she's just a little child practicing to communicate her emotions. And I'm not offended by her going through the steps. Oh. So I think that's the most important thing. You know, so there are people I know in our direct circles, we don't encounter people like this, but in therapy we do encounter people who actually scorn their children or joke with their children's emotions or make them feel guilty for having emotions or having needs. And especially when they grow older is when children have beliefs or they're experimenting with different ways of thinking about things. They also need to be able to process that with us, where we are able to be calm and in the conversation without judging, without forcing them to say certain things that we think is appropriate, and just giving them the space to explore things on their own in this accepting environment where they know that we might not agree with them, but yet we love them enough and we're curious enough and we're invested enough to go through the motions of exploring the different ideas with them.
Again, I think all these things are already, you can see that little silver lining going through all of it, of also, again, as you mentioned before, how you react to things and how, and I think it was Mel Robbins who I once listened to, where she's also a big advocate of that you can't, I think it's also stoicism, you can't control someone else's emotions. And people are allowed to, you also, even your own emotions, if you think, you are allowed to feel hurt by your grandchild saying that to you. You are allowed, but it is not, your child is also allowed to say things like that and feel like that in the moment. You can control how you then respond to that emotion. And as an adult, we do have the ability to logically think about this a little bit more and to control that emotion with logical thinking as well, to say, hey, it's a 4-year-old and sometimes they say silly things that they probably don't mean in that way at all. Maybe she also meant, I wish you were not my Oma, but I wish you were my mama. So that could also be it, because sometimes my kids love my mom's food a lot more than what they do mine, but that's a different note. But that also kind of segues now into the next thing of what we were talking, or the fourth need of now growing autonomy and competence. This one I think is really difficult in this day and age for parents, because I feel parents are very good at feeling emotions for their children, doing things for their children. We've got these, I don't even think it's called helicopter parents anymore. It's called curling parents, where they just kind of sweep the way for their child for everything. So I think it's like a very much a common thing for parents to be super overprotective. Am I right? How can parents encourage independence but still keep their children safe?
I think it's a practical thing. You know, it's the idea of valuing autonomy and competence starts at a mindset, whether it's something you value or not. Oftentimes, parents just simply don't think that it's important. They're focused on the outcome. So they tend to control the environment and the activities that the children participate in. They force them to conform to their very, very extremely high expectations. and deprive them from the chance to learn things on their own simply because they have this mission and this vision in mind for the child, as opposed to approaching the whole thing like a gardener would approach a garden. You know, there are different types of plants in a garden. Some need sun, some need more water, some will grow big, some will grow small, some will flower, some don't, some lose their leaves in the winter, others don't. And you can't change the basic way that this child is wired. You know, so we need to be observers of our children, look at what their needs are, and be on the background supporting them, pushing them into taking, risks and doing things that are scary and things that they might not always be successful in straight away. They need to make mistakes to learn. And when we value that and we have that type of mindset, then it we can't be coddling them. We can't, because how are they going to learn and grow? So in fact, the researchers say that parents who do overprotect their children end up with children who are less independent in the end, and they have lower self-esteem, they have a fear of failure, and they're much more likely to develop disorders such as anxiety, depression, drug abuse, and poor stress coping skills. I just want to say that it doesn't necessarily mean that every child that does struggle with something like anxiety or lower self-esteem naturally has a parent that did something wrong. Because remember, it's always an interplay between the child's inborn temperament and the environment that the child was born into. There's always that component that there's always the inborn temperament as well. So we can't judge parents because, you know, their children might struggle with certain things. But it does make it much more likely that a child will be competent and confident if we do practical things to give them an opportunity to develop these skills of independence, like giving them little jobs to do. It's so easy in South Africa when we have people working in our homes doing for us, and we're creating job opportunities, and that's beautiful and wonderful. But our children need responsibilities in the house. They need to be taken seriously and play and make a contribution to the household. They need to work, and they need freedom to explore and push their own boundaries and do things that they might not be the best at. You know, it's not important to be the best at everything. It's important to have goals, like you said, like yourself. You're a person who likes goals, and to have your own personal goals and to achieve them in your own time and to measure and the progress, as opposed to whether you're winning everything or not.
I love that. And I mean, for me, it's one of those things that I often refer to in my shows, and you can go listen to my show, obviously, quite a lot of them, or all of them are available as podcasts, is that sometimes, especially with small children, we forget that there's a long game with parenting. And we get caught up in these small things when they're really young, and we forget that in the end, actually, the goal is to create independent, functioning adults. And part of that, a big part of that, is creating this autonomy and competence. But more on this just now.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
If you've just joined me, you are on Bump and Beyond, and I am your host, Yolandi Becker. And as always, we're talking parenting. My guest today is Lizette van Huysteen, and we've been talking about the five core emotional needs of children. If you've missed this show so far, I really would encourage you to go listen to it. It's been really very insightful, talking about these emotional needs that children have, how they're integrated. Like, we're naming them as very separate things, but you can see how they kind of like weave into each other, and that it's important to always look at things as a whole as well, and not just one separate thing. Lizette just mentioned to me that I actually missed one of the core ones, and it's one of my favorite ones. I always say this, not on my show, I haven't said this a lot, maybe I'm not silly enough, but I always say that life should always have a little bit of silly in it. So really one of the things I love about life is being a little bit silly and laughing at silly jokes or something silly that you see. And one of the third needs, which I'm also partly suck at, spontaneity, and the other one, play. A third need is a very important one, is spontaneity and play. And this is also obviously very important, I think, for adults as well, not just for children. But is it really that straightforward, just being silly all the time? Why is play so essential for development, Lizette?
Yeah, so you have to understand that, well, we do all understand that children learn a lot of things during their little short time that they're children. So many things that we as adults will really struggle to acquire so much knowledge and so many skills in such a short time. And but they don't have the brain development that's needed for them to motivate themselves to study like we would if we go to university to study something, or we would just enroll for a course or teach ourselves or learn how to play golf. It takes some dedication and practice. But children, since they don't have that type of brain wiring to motivate themselves to learn, they need something else to get them to practice and practice and practice things over and over again and develop all the different parts of their brains. And that thing is called play. So they have this inborn need to play, to practice, to do things and experiment with different things in different types of settings, like formal play where you play a game with rules, you know, like a board game that teaches certain skills. And there are other types of play where you like rough and tumble play, where children learn a lot about their own self-regulation and you know, a lot of social skills in rough and tumble play. It's a very important part of their development. And then free play, which is extremely important. That is where children get to pretend. So they get to pretend to be somebody else. They get to pretend to experience certain emotions and pretend to do things that actually is preparing them for the life ahead. So that's so valuable and so important. And when we as our parents, as their parents, enter into their world of play, we touch their hearts.
Oh,
that's even more important than trying to be with them all the time and being physically close to them all the time.
Oh, you know, I mean, it's really, I feel so true. And again, I have to just remind everyone, parenting is a long game. And I can tell you, if there's one thing you're going to do as when your kids are small that you need to do is play with them. Because that's one thing that disappears, that they don't necessarily want to play with you anymore when they're older. They've got their own lives and their own things. So don't miss that opportunity to get down there and be silly with them and have fun with them, because it is super fun and it can be very silly.
And the interesting thing is that children who learn to play and be creative as children and have parents who are interested in them and look at them and be like a curious observer and look at what your child is pretending to be and talk about it and ask questions and let the child lead. And so from time to time, even play with them, especially when they invite you. We've got this hand puppet, and it's called Arpi, that I even have to take to family gatherings, and he has to visit. He's got a personality, and he is revered. He is loved. And sometimes she would say, Arpi, tell Oma to do this or that. Or Arpi, ask Oma to say that. And it's so fun to see how, you know, children up to the age of 5, they really do believe that the make-believe world is real. So they have this fantastical kind of perspective on the world that is important for them to be able to develop certain emotional and social skills. And it's beautiful to be part of that. So when we develop that as children, we take it into our adulthood. Like you and I, as we are now talking to each other here on the radio, I'm sure maybe you and I both have pretended to do this when we were children. So we have this kind of like we're playing. Yes. You know, we're playing, especially when you're mothering a child. you know, a lot of that, those skills that you've learned as a child when you played with a doll prepared you for taking on this role as you're older. And when we have this playful attitude towards our job and our work and our contribution to the world, we bring some magic into it. It helps us to be creative. It helps us to draw the right side of our brain into the whole equation of getting, you know, earning money. And so it is a very, very important part of development. And it's an important part of the relationship that we develop with our children. So it's so important for us to make sure that we do play with our children, and we don't only play things that are structured, but also the type of free play where we are pretending with them. We pretend to be somebody else or pretend to be in a certain situation.
Great. I love that. The final emotional need, unfortunately, we don't have a lot to go into, but I've had many shows about it because I love boundaries and limit setting. Over the years, I mean, I do think it's really important that children have, it's been also proven that it's children are happier and more settled when they know what is expected of them. Can you help us understand why boundaries are important quickly for emotional security?
It's important because the relationship that we develop with our children during the first 5 years of life, when we switch to just being a nurturer when they're like little babies to being their loving leader, that is laying down a foundation for the relationship that we're going to have with them for the rest of their lives. So they don't need a best friend who avoids conflict or a drill sergeant who demands obedience, but they need a steady, calm leader who teaches why the rules exist, someone who shows that love and limits can coexist. That's the basic idea. So there's this critical transition between the age of 1 and 5 that determines whether you will have a cooperative teenager that works along and want to be part of the family and contribute, or going to spend the next decade in constant conflict. And there are three steps. The women that actually always send our practice appearance to is Dr. Lindsay Emerson. I just want to give her the recognition.
We will look into that. Unfortunately, we do have to go to an ad break.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
And just like that, another show has come to an end, and it was really a wonderful conversation. Wonderful first conversation for 2026 with Lizette. Thank you so much, Lizette van Heinsteen. She's like an expert, you could hear it, on early childhood development and so passionate about this. Lizette, thank you so much for joining me. But before you go, please, can you just let people know where they can find you?
They can just visit www.practica.co.za. And have a look there at the contact us button and see how they can contact us. The Practica program is a comprehensive developmental program that uses play and activities to develop children's brains. And we also have the advisory service to help parents with their relationships with their children.
Great. Oh, thank you so much, Lizette. It was wonderful having you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
This show, like I said, as always, this show and all of my shows are available on highfm.com for you to go download. So please go have a look. We've got a very comprehensive library of different shows and topics that we've spoken about. So please go have a look at that. Also, remember that we have an app. So if you haven't downloaded the High FM app yet, you can on your phone. And then you have us all the time. And you can go listen to the podcast. Not just my show. All of the shows are available as a podcast. So please go have a listen to that. What I really take away from today's conversation is that meeting our children's emotional needs isn't about getting it right all the time. It's about connection, consistency, and being willing to grow alongside our children. These five core needs remind us that children don't need perfect parents. They need present parents. Thank you so much for listening today. Take what resonated, leave what doesn't, and remember that small, intentional moments matter more than we realize. So go out there with intention today to be kind. Thank you so much. Until next week, have a good week. Bye.